Hello and welcome. It is Eric Erickson here. It is my show, and you are welcome to call in 877-973-7425, 877-97-ERIC. This is happening now. Andrew Cathy, he's 43. He's younger than me, not by much. He's going to be the CEO of Chick-fil-A. Dan Cathy, his dad is 68, will be the chairman. Andrew Cathy will take the helm of the restaurant chain November 1st. 43-year-old CEO, incoming CEO of Chick-fil-A. Four kids, outdoor enthusiast, and he's younger than me. You know, I'm hitting that age where I'm starting to be sensitive with the fact that these up-and-coming leaders, they're my age or younger, and in any event, welcome. I'll try not to be bitter. Okay. I gotta start you somewhere today that some of you aren't going to want to go. Some of you aren't going to want to go here. Some of you will be enraged with me for going there. But I need to read you a story in the Washington Post that hit last night, is in today's paper. Listen, Democrats have been sharpening their attacks on Republicans over the pandemic, former President Donald Trump, and other polarizing attacks. And now, emboldened by victory in California's recall election, party leaders are seeking to further escalate hostilities ahead of the midterm elections. Beyond prompting a collective sigh of relief and a party reeling from a difficult summer, Governor Gavin Newsom's Tuesday win served as the first test of a revamped campaign strategy that Democrats quietly began assembling weeks ago amid a realization that positive talk about President Biden getting the country back on track had run into the harsh realities of a Delta variant coronavirus surge. Chastened by the resurgence, the difficult Afghanistan withdrawal, and declining public confidence in Biden's handling of the pandemic and other issues, Democrats have gone on offense against the GOP following private summer polling that showed broad and growing anger at the Republican resistance to vaccination, according to Democrats familiar with the discussions who, like others, spoke on the condition of anonymity to discuss tragedy. The Quinnipiac poll shows Joe Biden underwater. 42% approval in the Quinnipiac poll, which tends to lean pretty notably towards the Democrats. President Biden's polling average has him down 4 points, 45 to 49. He is in the territory of Gerald Ford in terms of the polling average now, in terms of popularity. Gerald Ford was the least popular president other than Donald Trump in modern polling time. I need to submit a proposition to you. What if Joe Biden's demands for mandatory vaccines at companies of 100 people or more is not intended to get compliance up with the vaccination rate up, but is rather intended to have the effect everyone said it would, which is for people to dig in their heels and not get vaccinated? What if it's part of a larger plan by Biden strategists, knowing that people will dig in their heels and refuse to get the vaccine, that they can then use that headed into the midterms to make people hate the Republicans? In other words, what if this is all part of a larger plan to try to divide people from the GOP, make people hate Republicans so that they turn out in the midterms to help Democrats? I don't like to go there in my thinking, but this Washington Post report and the polling seems to suggest that's exactly what the Democrats are doing. Their internal summer polling shows that more and more people are disdainful of the unvaccinated. It is obvious. It's even to Democrats, it's obvious that if the president of the United States goes out and tells people, get vaccinated or lose your job, or else you can do testing once a week, what people are going to do is they're going to dig in their heels. They're not going to get it. What if Joe Biden's announcement that he was demanding vaccines, mandating vaccines, was in fact a effort by design to get people to dig in their heels? So that the Democrats could then turn around and blame the unvaccinated and tie them to Trump supporters, because clearly the January 6th stuff is not working. They've been trying since January 6th to tie Republicans to the incursion into the Capitol. It's not working. They continue to beat that drum, but it's not working. Polling shows Republicans are not fully tied to that in voters' minds. Only some are. So the next thing they got to do is tie Republicans to the unvaccinated. Because I'll be honest with you, there is growing anti-vaccine sentiment out there, or anti-vax sentiment. How do I put that? Yes, there is growing sentiment among some. The Biden administration, I know people, it's human nature. I said this yesterday on the show. I know people who were headed to get the vaccine, and then Biden said, you better do it or else. And they're like, screw you, I'm not getting it. That's human nature. It was obvious that was going to happen. Everybody who knows anything about human nature, and politicians and political parties and pollsters know about human nature, obviously knew the moment the Biden administration says, do it or else, people are like, well, screw you. Or else what? And now you've got the polling that shows the Democrats intend to ramp up draconian vaccination measures. It's not a coincidence that Los Angeles County imposed mandatory vaccines and vaccine card checks before going into public areas or public arenas after Newsom won the recall. They waited to see if he would win the recall before dialing up the measures. Back to this Washington Post story. Democrats are openly touting vaccine mandates they once shied away from and chastising Republicans who oppose them. They're delivering sharper criticisms of the motives of the unvaccinated, a group that is largely Republican, and spending much more time talking about Trump. A year after Biden won the presidency on a promise of uniting the countries, Democrats have embraced a far more divisive set of talking points that cast their opponents as a threat to the country. The contrast is going to be clear as we move into 2022, Democrat National Committee Chairman Jamie Harrison told reporters Wednesday. The contrast between folks who are card-carrying members of Trumpism and folks who are Americans through and through and are fighting for this country. You got that? You're a patriot or you're a Trump supporter. You're a traitor to the country if you're a Trump supporter. If you don't get the vaccine, you're a traitor. It's all part of a plan. Ironically, the way to fight back is the way Republicans won't do it. They're not going to go get vaccinated. The people who are resistant to the vaccine aren't going to get vaccinated. So what they will do is they will go into 2022 being the villains for the Biden administration. And I suspect, I have a strong inclination to think that they'll actually overplay their hand on that. I don't think that it helps the Democrats here. Why? For a number of reasons, one of which is it prolongs the pandemic. They will try to blame Republicans. They will try to blame vaccine skeptics. But if Joe Biden demands everyone goes gets a vaccine or loses their job, and the pandemic continues to run unabated, then he looks even weaker. And that seems to be the case. You know, it's starting to fade in southern states. Florida's down 41%. Northern states are starting to increase their spread. West Virginia, which even the media, even though it's a red state, they've heralded the governor there in his efforts to get people vaccinated. West Virginia has seen a big spike in COVID rates. The media can't help itself. What it should be doing is covering hospitalizations and deaths instead of the spread of the vaccine, because a lot of people who get the vaccine can get COVID but don't go to the hospital or die, which is actually what we want. We don't want them overwhelming hospitals. But the media is so used to focusing on COVID rates, not hospitalization and death rates, they can't get out of the habit. And now COVID rates are going up in the north because it's clearly seasonally impacted by people going inside. And suddenly, it's not going to help them. And are they really going to blame a bunch of blue states where COVID is going up? Blue states that voted for Joe Biden, they're going to see the spread. New England states that voted for Joe Biden, Northwest Coast states, Illinois and the like, in the middle of the country, they're seeing the increase. But this is all part of a plan now. This is a very deliberate pattern and practice. They saw Gavin Newsom win the recall, and they've misinterpreted the results. California isn't like other states. California is unique. You got to recognize it's unique in its progressive spirit and in how far left it has gone and how the Republican Party itself went nuts and kind of broke apart. Virginia may be getting close unless the GOP saves itself. But California doesn't translate to the rest of the nation. California is exporting Californians to the rest of the nation at a rapid clip, so much so that by the next census, they may very well lose seats in Congress for the first time. And we're only a couple years in to this past census having been done. But the Democrats have interpreted Gavin Newsom's win there as a way to now put the pedal to the metal, accelerate mandatory vaccines, accelerate lockdowns, accelerate vaccine card mandates, vaccine passports. And there's some polling out there, though, that shows, including in the Quinnipiac poll, that Americans support vaccine mandates, but not by the federal government. They don't want the federal government to do it. They're okay with employer mandates, but not federal government mandates. And when you begin to vilify the unvaccinated, by the way, many of whom have real legitimate concerns for not wanting to get vaccinated, either future pregnancy for young women, or they've got medical conditions, or they've already had COVID, so they don't really need a two-round shot. A lot of people know those people. I know people who are skeptical and hesitant to getting the vaccine, and I'm very pro-vaccine. But a lot of my friends are skeptical. Many of them wound up ultimately getting it after other members of their family got really deathly ill, but they're still skeptical of it. They don't like the government forcing people into it. The Democrats' heavy hand, they think that just because Californians would be okay with it, and really Californians aren't super okay with it, it's just Larry Elder made it a Larry Elder versus Gavin Newsom race, and Californians were very not okay with Larry Elder. Californians were more okay with mandates than they were Larry Elder, which tells you everything you need to know about why Larry Elder running a big campaign in California probably wasn't a good idea. But this is now part of the Democrat strategy. In order to win in 2022, they've got to have a villain. Donald Trump is off the stage. They're going to try to bring him back. And if Donald Trump can't come, who is going to be their enemy? The unvaccinated, because polls suggest people are getting tired of them. They will vilify people who are unvaccinated. This is the party of Barack Obama, the man who told his supporters to take guns to knife fights, the man who told Hispanic voters that Republicans were the enemies, the man who told his voters to get in the face of people and yell at them if they were telling lies about Obama, the man who started an office in the White House where you could turn in your neighbor if they were lying about Obamacare. This is par for the course. The media doesn't like to talk about that aspect of the Democratic Party, that aspect of Barack Obama, but it's real, it's documented, it happened, and now they're going to escalate it with gusto and try to make you, if you're unvaccinated, the bad guy, tie you to Donald Trump and tell people, are you going to vote for the Hicks and Rubes that didn't get vaccinated, or are you going to vote for Democrats and help Joe Biden? I think a lot of people are not going to do what the Democrats think they're going to do. Welcome back. It is Eric Erickson here. How's about we go take a phone call to Jeff waiting patiently? You're going to be up first today. Welcome, Jeff.
Hey there, Eric. I just got a couple of things I wanted to get your comment on. Number one is the vaccine card. I know New York and L.A. I want you to show it to get into restaurants and bars, but and I've gotten the vaccine and I've got my card. But when I look at it, it just seems to me that it'd be very easy to just duplicate one and just make a fake one. And another thing I wanted to get your comment on is Afghanistan. Now that the U.S. has pulled out, from what research I've done, Afghanistan has got a lot of rare earth metals, and it just seems to me that it maybe just kind of opens the door for China to come in and grab all that up and just strengthen their position on what they already control of the rare earth.
You know, it's funny you should say that. Let me deal with the last one first, and thanks very much, Jeff, for the phone call. China already is trying to strike a deal with the Taliban and said they would recognize the sovereignty of their control of the country if they could have access to the mineral rights, which, of course, they're probably going to get from the Taliban. It's a dangerous situation. Another reason we should have rethought how we were exiting the country because of the mineral rights concerns there. We're essentially allowing China to become a monopoly when it comes to mineral rights. Now, on the vaccine passport, you know, I've asked a lot of people. Here's the problem. If you don't have the vaccine card, I've got a vaccine card. It is not well thought out. It's maybe 2.5-3 inches tall, 4 inches wide. It's not well thought out. It should be about half the size. But somebody, and I forget which news organization, went out and asked the CDC about the design of the COVID vaccine card. And it turns out nobody tested. Somebody essentially sat down at a computer, hammered out what it should look like, and nobody thought, maybe we should make it wallet size. Maybe we should make it a size whereby you could easily keep it in your wallet. That's why some companies are now allowing people to take pictures of their vaccine cards. Some states actually have apps now that generate a QR code whereby you can keep the card in your wallet. But that's the reason it was a rush job by the CDC. No one even thought at the moment, which kind of tells you a lot about the bureaucracy, does it not? That they rushed in to do this. They're like, let's not worry about measuring this out for your wallet. I'm sure it was someone with a giant purse who came up with it. All right, I got to play some audio for you. I think we may have to do this every day now. The libs of TikTok. We got another one. We got another genius from TikTok here. This is another progressive activist who wants to explain to you the way the world works and her theory. And by the way, she looks exactly as you might think that she would look. Yellow bangs and jet black long hair and lots of piercings and just very odd. Listen to this.
So the myth that we usually hear about adoption is that it's like a nice family adopting a child in need to give them a better life. As someone who was interested in adoption, I actually looked into stories from adoptees themselves, and what I learned horrified me. First of all, the history of the adoption system where I live in the United States is extremely colonial. It was built on a history of taking children of color from their families to give to white parents who could give them a, quote, better life, which is very racist, obviously. Our adoption system today still operates off that same implicit bias and racism. Black children, for example, are nearly twice as likely to end up in foster care based on their percentage of the population of the U.S. in total. Transracial adoptions are also disproportionately represented in these statistics, with 90% of transracial adoptions being white parents adopting children of color. Centering this idea of white saviorship, we also redirect funds through the...
Welcome back. It is Eric Erickson here. The phone number is 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. On Hipster Girl, the Libs of TikTok is an account. If you've got social media, I don't recommend you get Twitter, but if you do, you should follow it. It really is exposing the mindsets of overwhelmingly white people who believe the entire world is racist. If you weren't here for yesterday's edition, you had a college, a high school teacher, a young white male who said that teaching kids to behave in classrooms and be diligent with their work is a product of white supremacy. It is white supremacy with a hug, is how he described it. That encouraging kids to be respectful to teachers, turn their work in on time, to not be disruptive in class, that's white supremacy. I actually had a buddy of mine who's a college football coach called me last night just enraged by that clip and said, did this guy not realize that our black assistant coach is tougher on the black players sometimes than the white coaches are? And I had a caller call in, or it didn't call, emailed and said, a black grandmother is the strongest disciplinarian you will ever meet. For this white guy to claim that not being disruptive and being respectful and doing your work on time and turning it in an early way is somehow a product of white supremacy shows that, yes, when the progressives talk about privilege, they've got it. Who is he to lecture black people on what is or is not white supremacy when actually it's just good work ethic? And good work ethic has nothing to do with race. Now, here comes this girl today to say that transracial adoption just fosters white supremacy. Transracial adoption fosters white supremacy, that it's a product of colonialism, that black children are placed in foster care per capita at a higher rate. Maybe that has nothing to do with racism. Maybe it has to do with some underlying problems. It's just amazing to me how many people want to equate this stuff with white supremacy and racism as opposed to other factors. Why? To some degree, it is because the policies they support or are culpable of causing the problems, and they don't want to acknowledge that many of the policies they have advanced in the past are responsible for cracking up families, breaking up families, destroying the lives of kids, and ruining them. This is where we are as a country with progressives. Progressives are probably the greatest threat to the equality of races in this country than anything else. It's just shocking. Now, back to the phones we go. 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. Tom, you are going to be up next on the Eric Erickson Show. Welcome.
Hey, Eric, how you doing?
Good.
Love your show.
Thank you.
Hey, I got a question for you. With all the studies they've done on these antibodies for people who have COVID, why wouldn't we just give everybody a vaccine card once they test positive for COVID?
Look, we probably should. Given the data that's out there, this is one of my chief frustrations with the people who are screaming about the science in this, is we know overwhelmingly at this point that if you've had COVID, you at least immediately don't need a vaccine. And to the degree that you need a vaccine, it's in dispute as to when you need it and how much dose you need. In Europe and in the Middle East, particularly Israel, which has probably studied this more than most countries, in Israel and in Europe, among European Union countries, Germany in particular led the way on this. France has embraced, along with other countries, that if you've had COVID in the past, you don't need the vaccine. Or if you need it, rather, I should say that you only need one round of the vaccine. You only need one round of the Pfizer or the Moderna vaccine if you've had it. The antibodies for people, and here's the thing that I think has gotten muddied in the research now. I have talked to enough epidemiologists, and they've cited studies. I've gone back and looked. For a lot of people, if you've had COVID in the past, your antibodies stay very high for a very long time, giving you greater natural immunity than those who've had the vaccine. But here's the but. This isn't for everyone, and it's a significant portion of the population who sees their antibodies begin to fall, particularly those who were asymptomatic or had mild cases. The more severe case you had, the better your antibodies continue. A milder cases and asymptomatic cases, their antibodies tend to fade like people who've had vaccines. So that's why it's hard for public health officials to distinguish between the two. Hey, if your case was severe, you don't need it. But if your case was mild, you may need one. So they just say everybody needs to get one. It's hard distinguishing. But the bottom line is that for at least 6 months, in all cases, people who have had COVID, asymptomatic or severe, really don't need the vaccine. And in fact, if you get the vaccine too soon after you've had COVID, you can have a pretty severe reaction. I know somebody who got the vaccine recently and had a very severe reaction to the first dose. Now, typically, if you've had a severe reaction to the first dose, you don't really react to the second dose. And it's if you've had COVID, you tend to react to the first dose, not the second dose. But it was a reaction that this person was sick for a couple of days. That being said, still better than catching COVID. There are a number of people who have caught COVID a second time. And in a lot of cases, they get a worse case the second time than the first time. I will tell you, my wife tomorrow is scheduled to get the booster shot. Given her lung cancer, I wouldn't mind getting the booster shot. I'm perfectly comfortable getting the vaccine. I know some people are hesitant, and my goodness, there's a lot of disinformation out there people have bought into, or they're taking the exceptions and making them the rules. I'm totally fine with the vaccine. I think it works. No pressure on you. It is your choice. I don't think you should be bullied or forced to get it by the federal government, but I think it works. That being said, I think if you've gotten COVID, you probably can go a while without getting it. And the government should be willing to be honest about this. And here's part of my issue with why they should be honest about it. The longer they're not honest, because everybody knows, it's well documented. So the longer the government isn't willing to acknowledge this is the case, the more distrust grows over the government. And we're dealing with a deficit of trust right now that's causing people to not want the vaccine, and bullying them isn't going to help. The Democrats, I think, at this point have decided bullying them means they're not going to get it, and that'll help the Democrats' chances. It's all about retention of power and gaining power for the Democrats next year. They're starting to get really worried about losing the Senate, and they have reason to be worried about losing the Senate. Here is a piece. This is in Roll Call. Now, it is an opinion piece, but it's from David Winston. David Winston, you should know, the president of the Winston Group, was a longtime advisor for Newt Gingrich, advises companies on strategic planning. He's an elections analyst as well. Let me read you part of what he writes. Ed Koch, the late colorful mayor of New York, was famous for asking his constituents, "Hey, how am I doing?" That's a question most politicians ought to ask once in a while, never more so than Joe Biden, as his summer slide accelerates into a grim September of one crisis after another. If public opinion polls are an indicator, he's not going to like the answer he's going to get. In essence, political surveys are the statistical equivalent of Koch's trademark question. Most surveys test what people think of the job Biden is doing as president. While surveys test a range of questions in different ways, two standard questions form the basis for analyzing the current political strength of any president and his administration: the president's overall job approval and approval of his handling of voters' top concern. In other words, how am I doing overall, and how am I doing on the number one issue to most voters? Currently and usually, the economy. Biden's numbers aren't good on either. Over the past month, survey after survey has shown a steady decline in his job approval ratings, with many now finding him underwater, with disapproval higher than approval. The September 4 through 6 Winning the Issue survey found Biden's job approval below 50% for the first time since he took office, and barely above water at 46% approved to 44% disapprove. For some perspective on just how steep a decline that is, the February survey put Biden's job approval disapproval at 57-30. Given that roughly 158.6 million people voted in the last election, that means the president has lost 17.4 million voters who once approved of his job performance, and 22.2 million now disapprove. More now disapprove. Sobering numbers for the White House. The economic numbers are part of the problem for Joe Biden. I can move beyond what David Winston is saying. He's got a point here. But the president has some troubles. Consumer spending went up a little bit in the last month, according to the Wall Street Journal. But CNBC has a story out that the stock market is showing more and more signs of serious trouble. More and more stocks are starting to run into trouble, even as the S&P 500 is close, is about 1% away from its all-time high. And more financial advisors are advising their older clients in the market that now is definitely the time to convert yourself to bonds, because there are underlying fundamental problems within the stock market right now. And it's probably about to correct, if not crash. That's what financial advisors are saying, and it's reflected in a lot of the reporting. Inflation continues to rise. There's a report out today in Bloomberg about shipping container problems that in some cases now companies have to pay $25,000 to just secure a shipping container that arrives on time. To put that in perspective, a year ago, do you know how much it was? A year ago, $2,000. So from $2,000 to $25,000 in a year. On top of that, the Democrats are misreporting Joe Biden's handling of Afghanistan. They're saying, yes, a majority of Americans supported leaving Afghanistan. Yes, that's true. But a majority of Americans also believe he botched the withdrawal. There are Democratic pollsters out there highlighting the former and ignoring the latter to their detriment. The fact of the matter is, when you have pollsters come out on one side of the aisle and they tell you what you want to hear and not what you need to hear, you are bound to not do a course correction that you need to do. And right now, Democratic pollsters are trying to convince people that everything is fine and hunky-dory when really it's not. One of the few people out there on the left who's raising red flags is Dan Greenberg, the Democratic pollster who works with James Carville, saying the Democrats are toast if they don't hurry up and do something different. He's trying to rally the base. He's trying to get people mad at Republicans over vaccinations. He's trying to fire up the base over the abortion issue in Texas, but Democrats are fundamentally divided right now, even on the infrastructure bill. In fact, it appears moderate Democrats in the House are beginning to sabotage the infrastructure bill, and Nancy Pelosi, who is term limit herself, she's done. Nancy Pelosi is not running again. This is her last time as Speaker. Win, lose, or draw, this is it. She's done. And she has nothing left to lose, and she is far more progressive than the moderates would prefer her to be. And at this point, she's siding with the progressives in the House against the moderates, throwing them under the bus when many of them can't afford to take the vote she wants them to take because they really will lose next year. They're going to lose anyway, but they're trying to hang on. The Democrats have divided themselves between the progressives and the moderates. Moderate voters are moving back to the GOP. Multiple polls have shown on average a 12-point swing of college-educated voters back to the GOP right now. Why? Afghanistan, the viral rebound, and the economy. That's one reason you're hearing so much in the press of people attacking the unvaccinated and trying to shame them. It is a coordinated message moment for the media and the Democrats to shame the unvaccinated and blame the entire economic situation of the country on them, so the Democrats don't have to say Joe Biden screwed stuff up. I don't think it'll work for him because too many people know too many other people who have legitimate reasons to be skeptical of the vaccine right now, and making them the bad guy isn't going to go over well with most Americans, I suspect. Now, I want something to go over with you guys. Clean air in your house, odorless air. The air that you can clean up because, let's say, you don't want to run essential oils, you don't want to do the diffuser, you don't want to mask the odors, you want to get rid of the odors. Let me recommend the Eden Pure Thunderstorm. Right now, you can get three of them. It's a filterless air purifier. You don't have to get a subscription for air filters at all. All you do, you get the Eden Pure Thunderstorm, and away you go. What do I mean by away you go? Well, you get to clean the air, you get to get rid of the bacteria, you get rid of the mold, the pollen. You get to get rid of it all. It cleans the air. And you hold this thing in the palm of your hand. It works. It packs a wallop and it's small. And right now you get three of them and save $200. What you do is you go to EdenPureDeals.com. You click on my name. You get the Eden Pure Thunderstorm. Put it in your cart. It's a pick the buy three offer. And then at checkout, you'll see a discount code box. And you put in ERICK3, ERICK3. And you will get $200 off. So you'll get three Eden Pure Thunderstorms for less than $200. And you'll get free shipping. You can clean the air in your house, not mask the odor, eliminate the odor with the Eden Pure Thunderstorm. The Republican Governors Association has just put out it's an internet video. It's too long to actually be a commercial ad because it's 2 minutes, but this is worth it. It begins with Karl Marx's quote that history repeats itself first as tragedy, then as farce. And we go from there.
For the first time in the history of our country, a majority of our people believe that the next 5 years will be worse than the past 5 years.
Nationwide, gas prices reaching their highest point in nearly 7 years.
I have been here now for an hour and 15 minutes.
Where's the president? Can he come help us?
Why doesn't anybody contact the president? Why is he letting this happen to us?
The people are looking for honest answers, not easy answers.
The Biden plan is working. We're getting results.
Horrible jobs report.
The August jobs report is a lot worse than we thought.
Americans are getting very worried about inflation.
Inflation rising. It's the consumer price index going
and
up.
It is a malaise that's coming back to America, as Jimmy Carter said.
They're looking at 1970-style economic stagflation.
Biden economics is not working for America.
We continue to face a grave situation in Iran.
The likelihood there's going to be Taliban overrunning everything and owning the whole country is highly unlikely.
Taliban leaders today took control of the final stronghold of the resistance. They now have full control of the country.
The Taliban is running this show.
We're hearing about an explosion that has just taken place in the airport in Kabul.
This is now the deadliest attack on U.S. forces in Afghanistan
in more than a decade.
His decision has led directly to the nightmare playing out in Afghanistan.
They've left these Americans behind.
The Taliban is holding them hostage.
Some 60 Americans, bound and blindfolded, are now beginning their sixth day of captivity.
The government of Iran must recognize the gravity of the situation.
Critics call the events of this week in Biden's Jimmy Carter moment.
And Biden's approval sinking fast.
People are starting to say it's a lot like Jimmy Carter.
We are at a turning point in our history.
Okay, hang on. Sorry. Oh.
That last bit, that's priceless. Well done to the Republican Governors Association. Speaking of the Republican governors, one is going to join me in the third hour of the program today, Governor Brian Kemp of Georgia. He has been organizing governors around the nation to fight the vaccine mandate, and I'm going to talk to him about what he's doing in his state and with the other governors to take a stand. Also, Lila Rose is going to join me from Life Action to talk about the Texas abortion law. But I got this Jimmy Carter situation, the Democrats are kind of nervous about it because history has a way of repeating itself. And inflation appears to continue to be going up. The Democrats would have you believe it's transitory, but it's looking less and less like it's transitory. There are problems on the way. And in fact, companies are coming up with different ways to have to deal with the labor shortage as well that there is. In fact, this is from Money Magazine. Companies are so desperate to fill jobs, they're getting rid of drug tests. The global labor shortage has made work perks all but essential for companies scrambling to fill open roles. But in addition to promises of higher wages, flexible schedules, and free college tuition for workers, one hurdle is getting a job is disappearing. In a survey out Tuesday, from Staffing for a Manpower Group, 9% of employers worldwide said they're eliminating job screenings or drug tests in order to attract and retain talent. That may not work so well in the long term, but, well, the issue is there. They got to find a way to bring workers in. And, you know, in some states with recreational marijuana, it's hard to bring in workers unless you drop that exempt.